Hey everyone, I'm Hattie O'Neill, and this is Eerie. So I just had like an incident with spray foam, foam covered in sticky stuff, so I figured I would try to get an episode out for you all. Yeah. Okay, so, I thought it'd be cool if I started, like reviewing films as well. A couple of weeks ago now, I watched Antlers, which I definitely recommend. So this film is based off of the novel that called The Quiet Boy, by Nick Impasto. And I'm kind of surprised it's only rated at like 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know. So the synopsis is as follows. In an isolated Oregon town, a middle school teacher and her sheriff's brother become embroiled with an enigmatic student whose dark secrets lead to terrifying encounters with an ancestral creature. So first of all, let me say that the absolute unending darkness of the story is like a complete juxtaposition to like the amazing scenery. I don't think that would be lost on anyone to see visually what's going on, but then like the story, it was just a very big contrast, and I think that was done on purpose. So the story is quite sad. I really wanted to just like reach through the screen and like hug this little boy and like punch like a middle school bully in the face for him, but obviously it's a film, so I can't do that. I don't know. It was kind of like watching like a really intense like you know like the train is going too fast, but you can't stop listening because you know it's inevitably going to happen. I don't know. I just couldn't stop walking away. Or I couldn't stop watching. I couldn't move away from it. I don't know. Overall, I feel like it was terrifying, but in a good way, and not like a, you know, Hollywood horror movie trope kind of way, if that makes sense. You had to like try to piece things together. I think overall I would say like 4.5 out of 5. I think if you're giving like a star or tomatoes or whatever the fuck they do, I would say it's like a lot. Okay, so the main topic for this episode is Japanese ghosts and folklore. I was first made aware of the tales of the spirits of those lost in the tsunami in 2011. I first seen like a ghost tale on like the reprisal of Unsolved Mysteries. So it like piqued my interest, so I decided I would look into it. I don't like to be sticky, so a little phone thing got me riled up earlier. So after seeing the episode on the new Unsolved Mysteries, I decided I would look into the book by Richard Lloyd Perry. And it's called Ghosts of the Tsunami, Death and Life in Japan's Disaster Zone. And that was the main source for a lot of the research that I did for this episode, even though I don't feel comfortable talking about like a lot of the things that were covered in that book, because it was just really, really, really sad. Like the immense amount of grief that so many people felt and would still be feeling today. I don't feel comfortable talking about it in like a trivial kind of way. I'll talk about it in a different way. But it was just like heart-wrenching, and I definitely like I cried a lot reading his book. It was very good, and I would definitely recommend it if you enjoy reading or if you like talking about different cultures. Yeah. I highly recommend it. It is sad, especially I feel like if you are a parent, that it focuses a lot on the children that were lost in an elementary school. It fucking broke me, so yeah, it's a good book. Don't read it if you don't want to have like an emotional reaction though, because I think what most people would have reading is the book that he compiled of all the different people he encountered after the tsunami hit, and learning about the school and all that. So, I'm not really gonna go into a whole episode about that because I can't. Basically, the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they were recounting like these tales of taxi drivers giving rides to individuals who asked to get to an address which has been washed off of the island of Japan, like it's no longer there at all. So these taxi drivers drive them to where this address should have been. And then when they turn around to be like, there's nothing here, see? Like the person would be gone. I think I even saw some reports online of like the back of the seat being wet, like the back the seat in the taxi being wet, like somebody had been who had been drenched had sat in the seat. So that's what piqued my interest. That's not really what I ended up with though. So for anybody who doesn't know, the effects of the tsunami were profound for the northeastern coast of Japan. And I don't really think how sad everything was can truly be grasped unless you actually like look into like their culture a little bit. And kind of like understand how they deal with loss and death. Because it is significantly different than like what I've experienced in America, and I mean there are different experiences in like Ireland and places like, you know, like Western European countries, so I can only imagine that it's different everywhere, but it's way more involved than anything I've experienced. So let's see, where should I start? Okay, so according to Terry's book, the people of Japan don't consider themselves to be religious, like, at all. They consider themselves to be more scientific-minded, if that makes sense. But it turns out that many people of Japan do practice different aspects of Shinto or Buddhism. So Shinto existed on Japan before any other religion, and it wasn't actually considered a religion until the idea of of religion itself arrived with other religions to the island. Shinto gods are called kami, And they are believed to be sacred spirits and are part of everything, including like wind, mountains, rivers, and even fertility, I believe. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. Kind of different to show my head around. So, once a person dies, they become Kami themselves and are revered by their family. People are thought to be naturally good, and most rituals are performed to ward off evil spirits, which I also thought was kind of interesting. So it seems like after the introduction of other cultures, Japan ran headfirst into embracing science and try to like separate themselves from their old ways and their old superstitions. It seems like they achieved that in a lot of ways, but I feel like at least in some of like the house of practices that are described in Carrie's book, I would say some people still embrace the old ways there. In Japan, they honor their deceased differently and on a more regular basis than I think that we do. They have shrines honoring their deceased family members inside of their actual home. They leave food, candies, drinks, flowers, gifts, and other items for their ancestors. They keep them more present in their lives overall. Personally, I kind of like to take flowers to my grandparents' graves, and I feel bad. It's like a 2-hour drive, so I can't do it as often as I would like. But they seem to leave gifts for their family like almost on a daily basis. Maybe it's more weekly, depending. I'm not sure, but it seems like they revere their dead a lot more. So, in Japan, they consider it normal to pray to their ancestors and loved ones. In Terry's book, he tells us some bereaved mothers asking him if he would like to meet their child. More or less referring to the child that they lost in the tsunami. And then he'd be led to the family shrine that contains pictures and different mementos that they still had from their children. And I might add that it's kind of miraculous that some of them had mementos still, because some people lost their children, their place of work, their houses, everything, multiple family members. So, yeah. It's really, really heartbreaking to know the amount of loss that some of these people experience. So obviously my heart goes for them. I know that obviously it doesn't help them. And probably some people would be annoyed to hear me say that. Just when I know someone's in pain, like, I hate that I can't fix it, you know what I mean? And, I feel like that would be, like, a really strong feeling of that if I were to encounter them in person. So this is just reading about it in a book. So in Japan, when a family member passes away, there is actually a 20-step process of specific rituals that must be performed in order for their spirit to be at rest. 9 out of 10 funerals in Japan have Buddhist and or Shinto traditions within them. So, for example, when a family member dies, the altar and shrine are closed and covered to keep the spirit of the deceased out of the shrine, which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, it kind of made me think of, like, covering a mirror. Like, some Western cultures cover mirrors so, like, you see the soul isn't trapped. So, I don't know, made me think of that. traditionally, the eldest male child or eldest male relative would organize the funeral arrangements. The 20 steps that they go through are meant to purify and allow the spirit to move on to the spirit world. I won't go through all of them, because I would make for an incredibly long episode. But among them, family members are required to do certain ritual prayers. You're supposed to cleanse to the home. And at one point, towards the end of the 20-step ritual, they are supposed to sift through their loved one's ashes and pick the bones out. And I believe they put them in a separate urn. I think, like, they have a few of the little itty-bitty urns that you know, people in the family would keep, like, a little bit of their ashes in, like, their household shrine, and then the majority of the remains are buried or interred at a cemetery. Yeah, kind of interesting. So from what I could find, the majority of people are cremated in Japan, with the exception of, like a handful of, like, notable people, or whoever they would deem that they wanted them to not be cremated. So it's kind of interesting, because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like in some regards, cremation is kind of, like, taboo, in, like, Western culture, and yeah, I just think it's kind of an odd difference. So, it was interesting. You also learn in, Perry's book that there were a lot of elderly people that passed away, because they were trying to gather all of the items from the family shrine, and they didn't make it out in time, and the tsunami, the water swept the whole, everything away. It was intense. Another heartbreaking fact is the number of families that didn't, actually get to recover their loved ones' remains, and weren't able to actually perform the traditional burial ceremonies. There were unfortunately, like, many different families that waited months and months to be able to find their missing children. And I believe there's, like, one mom who went against tradition and learned how to operate a backhoe and spent months, like, digging through mud to try to find her child among other children that went to school with her child, and this was terrible. Literally, really terrible. So, overall, rather than focus on the tragedy of the tsunami, I wanted to talk at length about different spirits that they believed in, or I guess believed in the elders in Japan, and then some of the cultural folklore of Japan. And my main source for this information actually comes from the podcast called Uncanny Japan, and that was hosted by Teresa Matsura, and I love her. I could listen to her talk for like hours, and I have. She's got a wonderful her voice is very soothing. And I kind of want to say motherly, but not in like, I don't know if that's like the right term. She's comforting, I guess is the right way to put it. But if you are at all interested in learning more about Japan or hearing a pretty awesome podcast, I would check her podcast out. So, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to try to pronounce everything properly. Practice, that doesn't mean that an execution that it'll be right. So strong, I'm sorry. I really have tried to not be a bit spicy. Okay, so yokai are spirits, but not in the way that the Western culture think of them. So according to Teresa Matsuri's show, once an item has its 100th birthday, it gains a soul. I thought it was really cool because there's a lot of like animism in Japan, it seems like. So that was kind of interesting, but it's like everything should have its own spirit. And that would be yokai. And actually, yokai translates to strange apparition. And the word is comprised of two kanji. I think that's how. I'm sorry. So the first kanji would mean attractive or calamity, which I thought was kind of cool. And then the second mean is apparition, mystery, or suspicious. So that was kind of cool. And then the next, I guess, definition or spirit type entity would be a yurei. And that's what we would consider ghosts in our culture, in like Western culture. So I believe there's two kanji for that word as well. And it's comprised of one meaning saint or dim, and then the other meaning soul or spirit. And it's believed that yurei, like all other spirits, cannot be destroyed, so the best you can do is appease them. So I don't know if that's good or bad overall. Traditionally, yurei are portrayed with messy hair. They wear their white burial kimono. And they float because they don't have feet. Who knew? It is believed that strong emotions or something left undone is the usual cause for yurei, and you have to find a way to put them at peace. So it's kind of like our responsibility to help them move on. So that was kind of interesting. So sometimes this may be a family member seeking to avenge their death if they died wrongfully. And it could also be like a soul wishing to express their love for someone, or their remains may be found and they want a proper burial. So I think that traditional fear could be seen as, you know, a reason why some people might, you know, be afraid of the deceased from the tsunami coming back because they need a proper burial. So now that you know the difference between yokai and yurei, let's explain a popular game. So during the Edo period, a game called, I apologize in advance, let's try this. Okay. Hayaku Monogatari Kaidon Kai, or A Gathering of 100 Supernatural Tales. So that became a very popular game during the Edo period. For reference, the Edo period was between 1603 and 1867, and was marked by peace, and during that time they had a lot of Japan first policies, and that was under the rule of the Tokugawa shogunate? Sorry. Okay, so to play this game, you needed multiple players, you needed 3 rooms, 100 candles, and a mirror, and like a table to put the mirror on. Okay, so when the sun begins to set, the players would light all 100 candles in the third room, and then place the mirror on the table. When the sky grew dark, players would gather in the first room. Each person would take a turn telling a ghost story, or kaiden. At the end of each tale, the storyteller had to pass from the first room to the second room into the third room, blow out the candle, and then look in the mirror. After gazing into the mirror, they must pass back into the first room in slightly increased darkness. As each kaiden ended, the room would grow more terrifying as the darkness slowly devoured the room. The idea was to create a perfect atmosphere to invoke spirits. After you told the 100th ghost story and blew out the final candle, the room would be swallowed up by the blackness, thus providing a terrifying gaze in the mirror. Apparently, most players rarely made it past the 99th story, which I don't blame them. Because they would grow more and more fearful of the ominous atmosphere. If this game was completed, there are several types of yurei that you could have conjured up. Okay, so the onryo? Sometimes I just can't say things the way that they should sound, but I'm sorry. So this is the most dangerous type of ghost, or yurei. It is believed that onryo can inflict harm on the living. This ghost history can actually be traced back to the 8th century, when an onryo possessed a man and caused his death. A dume, a ghost of women who either died during childbirth or without making sure that their children were taken care of. So it is believed that those ghosts, or yurei, appear to their children in their greatest time of need, or will sometimes bring those children like little gifts they get different times. So it's kind of interesting. Goryeo, sorry, I thought you butchered that one, are another form of powerful ghosts that are very dangerous. They are the souls of those martyred in life, then come back to seek revenge. So they can cause fires, destroy crops, cause typhoons, and even earthquakes. Yuna yurei, or ship ghosts, are the spirits of mariners who died at sea. Traditionally, ghosts approach ships that are out at sea. They will ask the ship's crew for a ladle, and they will proceed to sink the ship by ladling water into that ship. Some accounts say that Yuna yurei appear as mermaids or mermen. Interesting. And some sailors apparently traditionally kept a ladle with a hole drilled into it, in case they happened upon a Yuna yurei on their voyage, so they could give them the ladle they asked for, but the water's gonna drain out. So. And I feel like when I screw this one up, try harder. Jubei spirit, or earthbound spirits, are thought to be a rare ghost that is bound to a circumstance or place, and it is thought that they usually appear in the place of their death. This one kind of made me feel like it's like the traditional thought about what a ghost would be in Western culture, like in Lep Castle. There are a bunch of stories about ghosts being somewhere that they died or had like tragic events happen to them, so that's what it makes me think of. Okay, so switching gears kind of, we are going to talk about a famous ghost story of Japan. There are multiple different versions of the story. If you listen to Uncanny Japan, Teresa Metzger actually has, she's a writer as well. So she has a version, or her version of the Oyo story recorded on her podcast, and it's quite good. So I will kind of go over a brief history, and then kind of relate a version of her story, because there are multiple versions. They're all equally kind of crappy for her, but you know, it's a good story, so I kind of assumed that it wouldn't be great. Oh yeah. Okay, so, the tale of Oyuwa. The real Oyuwa died in 1636 during the Edo period, when that theme that we mentioned just a little bit ago was popular. It is rumored that her onryo still haunts the place that she lived. So in 1825, her story was dramatized and made into a kabuki play. The legend states that she haunts her to perform her story. It is customary for those involved in her play to leave offerings to appease her spirit. Those who did not have mysteriously died or had strange disasters befall them. A small shrine and temple were erected for her in the ruins of her family home in Yokosuka, I believe is how you say it. In 1879, a fire destroyed the shrine, and it was moved to another part of Tokyo. So this shrine was destroyed during World War II, and after the war, a new shrine was rebuilt at the original location. And to my knowledge, that's where it remains today. There is a gravestone at Myogyoji in Sugamo, Tokyo. And is believed to be Oyuwa's actual grave. So as I said, there are several versions of the story, but I'll just share the basic overall one with you, like, different aspects of it seems. I've heard, like, at least 5 different versions, and just in, like, the research that I did, so I'm sure there's, like, probably hundreds, but I'll just tell you the main points, essentially, and then if you want to look into all of the different versions of Oyuwa's story, go for it. Okay. So, Oyuwa married a samurai named Yeimon. However, Yeimon was a terrible fucking person. Shocker, right? he did not provide for them, and was actually quite a scoundrel. So Oyuwa grew tired of his antics and planned on leaving him and returning to her father's home. Her father's name was Yotsuya Simon. Again, I'm trying really hard to pronounce these properly. I'm sorry if I suck. At one point, Yotsuya Simon confronted Iemon and told him that he didn't treat his daughter properly. Upon hearing this, Iemon drew the sword and murdered Simon in cold blood. Iemon then returned to Oyuwa and told her that a stranger had murdered her father, because Iemon is a piece of shit. Anywho, Oyuwa was devastated, and Iemon promised he would avenge her father's death. So clearly, it's only gonna get more fucked up, right? Yeah. Cool. Alright. So, Oyuwa worked to provide for her and her husband, and sometimes, sometime later, Oyuwa became pregnant and gave birth to a son. In some versions, all of the next events transpire while she's pregnant. Some happen after she's had the baby. It kind of just depends on the version of who here. I don't know. Either way, Iemon becomes resentful and hates Oyuwa, even though, you know, she's either carrying her baby or has given birth to his baby and is taking care of the baby and working to provide the care for their entire family because he's too fucking lazy. Yeah, okay. Anyway, okay. We don't like you anymore. So, a rich doctor named Ito Kihei lived nearby and befriended Iemon. Ito Kihei has a beautiful young granddaughter named Uyume. Uyume is instantly attracted to Iemon, because of course she doesn't live. And has her heart set on being with him, right? Anyway, Iemon spends more and more time at the doctor's house, building their relationship, and courting Uyume while he's still married to Oyuwa. Those of you who are listening to the podcast, if you watch my YouTube video, I make a lot of faces right now. Sorry. I don't like Iemon. Anywho, okay. So, the doctor and Iemon conspire to find a way to get rid of Oyuwa, so that he will be free to marry Uyume and inherit all of their riches. Which, you know, Iemon's lazy as shit, so it sounds like a great plan for him. Anyway, the doctor gives Iemon an ointment to make Oyuwa feel better, because, you know, he suddenly felt sick. But in reality, it was a terrible toxin. The poison horribly disfigures Oyuwa's face. The doctor mentions that Iemon should divorce Oyuwa, then Iemon would be much better off to fit Ito family. So, in some versions, Iemon and the doctor knew exactly what the tincture or the whatever medicine he was giving him, what it would do to her. And then in some versions, it seems like Iemon is just, you know, going along with whatever the doctor says to do, and then he's like, oh, it fucked up her face, so now I want to divorce her. It's a little more kind of hazy in that situation, but either way, he's so I digress after that. Okay, so, Iemon began pawning Oyuwa's belongings in order to have money for his wedding for Uyume, which is cute. Iemon needed a legitimate reason to leave Oyuwa, so he paid his friend Takutsu to rape Oyuwa, because if she was raped, that was her fault in that story, or in that time. So, yeah, that's not triggering anything. Basically, so if his friends did that, then Yaman could accuse her of infidelity and leave her, and it would be like legal or whatever. So one night, Tetsutsu, his friend, entered the home, and upon seeing Oyo's face, he became so frightened by her visage that he abandoned the plan. I guess Iemon didn't tell him, like, yo, I gave him this shit and it fucked up a face. No. So, instead, he explained Iemon's plan to Oyuwa and then showed her a mirror. Because up until this point, she hadn't looked in the mirror recently. She's been too fucking busy doing shit. Oyuwa had not seen her face and was unaware of her disfigurement from the tincture. When she saw her reflection in the mirror, she screamed in terror. She attempted to cover her face with her hair, but when she brushed it, huge clumps of hair and scalp and blood began to fall out. Oyuwa lost her mind at this moment. She grabbed a nearby knife and cut her own throat. As she fell to the floor, choking on her own blood, she kept repeating, "Yaman, I curse you. Yaman, I curse you. Yaman, I curse you." Kohei, Yaman's servant, discovered Oyuwa's body. When Kohei told Yaman the terrible news, instead of being distraught, he was overjoyed. Kohei became suspicious of Yaman, but before he could do anything, Yaman murdered him. So in some versions, Kohei was one of his friends. In some other versions, Kohei was his servant. I believe in one version I heard, they had accused Kohei of sleeping with Oyuwa. There's a lot of different versions, but essentially they used him as a scapegoat also, kind of, so, yeah. So, Yaman nailed Kohei and Oyo's bodies to a door and threw them in the river. Yaman claimed that he had been having an affair, and now Yaman was free to marry Urume. At long last, Yaman got what he had longed for. There was a big production, a large wedding, and finally Yaman was to wed Urume. On their wedding night, Yaman had difficulty sleeping. He rolled over to face his beloved Urume, but before his eyes was the horribly disfigured face of Oyuwa, oozing and bleeding. Yaman grabbed his samurai sword and slashed at Oyuwa. Oyo's spirit disappeared, and to Yaman's horror, Urume was laying there on their futon, covered in blood, deceased. Terrified, Yaman ran next door to find Ito Kihei to get help. Once inside the Ito home, Yaman sees the ghost of Kohei. Again, Yaman draws his samurai sword and slashes wildly, but it's actually Kohei, or Ito Kohei, and not his former worker slash friend in whatever version of the story you read. So Kohei disappears, and before his eyes, on the floor, is Ito Kohei. So Yaman fled the house, but Oyuwa's onryo was never far behind him. Yaman saw her face in water puddles. She haunted his dreams each night. He heard her voice calling out, "Yaman. Oyuwa even appeared in paper lanterns. Yaman eventually fled to the mountains, hoping to escape her. Yaman could no longer discern between his nightmares and reality, and he slowly descended into madness. I feel really bad for Oyuwa. I was able to find a picture of the temple, at least the most recent temple that was built in her honor, And I'll put that on my Instagram page. In case you're interested in booking, I'm also going to try to put a picture, like a traditional picture of her painting. Like, it's got, like a lantern, kind of like set of rays with her face coming out of it. So it's kind of an interesting artist rendition of the story. So, I mean, there's some aspects of it that seem to have been, like, cohesive, no matter who told it or what version you got. Like, everything I did here did mention seeing her face in the paper lantern. So that was kind of interesting. Okay. I'm really trying to pronounce everything properly, and I'm really sorry to anybody who is thinking your Chinese is just like, you're fucking wrong. I'm really sorry. I'm really, really trying to get it right. Listen, so, people who speak Japanese, say them, and, I feel like sometimes my mouth just doesn't do what I want it to do, so I apologize. Okay. So, finally, I want to tell you about an urban legend of Kusisaki Ono, or in English, the Slipmouth Woman. So, the Slipmouth Woman is a malevolent spirit who likes to harm others. Apparently, in the 1970s, there was a kind of mass hysteria revolving around her story. So there was an article about a woman encountering her outside at her farm. Like, the woman owned a farm and she was outside and then encountered the Slipmouth Woman, right? And then everyone kind of went crazy. And then during this panic, children weren't allowed to walk around themselves. Police patrols increased, which is kind of interesting, and I think kind of tells, or like, hints at how seriously it was taken. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. Okay. So, according to this urban legend, she partially covers her mouth with either a mask, a paper fan, or another object. The Slipmouth Woman will approach you and ask, "Am I pretty?" If you reply the answer, "No," she will pull up her knife or scissors, depending on who you ask, and murder you on the spot. If you tell her yes, she slowly removes the covering from her face and asks, "How about now?" But now you can see that she's got a cut extending from her lips to her ears on both sides of her face. So if you tell her no, I just said that she will cut you in half. If you answer yes, she cuts your face to match her. So clearly a terrifying urban legend either way. As most urban legends do, the Slipmouth Woman has several origin stories, some of which include an adulterous wife having her face cut by her samurai husband, a severely botched plastic surgery event, and even a dentist gone crazy. yeah. In some versions, she has incredibly sharp teeth that are revealed when she shows you her face and smiles at you menacingly. Should you have the misfortune to meet her, there are a few ways to avoid being murdered by her. All of them entertaining. I'll say that now. Okay. So first, if you throw coins at her, or to her, she will be distracted. She will try to gather them up and then it'll give you a chance to, like, run away from her. Second, you can throw hard candies at her. In some versions, she loves them, and in other versions, she hates them. Either way, it gives you time to give her the slip. There is also a theory that she either loves or despises tofu, so if you just went grocery shopping on a daily basis, you might fare better. If you just have a block of tofu you can chuck out. Who knew? And the version where she fell victim to a botched plastic surgery, if you say pomade, either 3 or 6 times, she will run away from you. In this version, the surgeon who did her terrible surgery had flicked that hair, and now if you mention pomade, it gives her like PTSD, and she's reminded of her surgeon. You also have the option of giving her a vague answer or answering her with a question, and then it seems to like confuse her. So, you could say, "Do you think I'm pretty?" Or you could say, "I guess so," and she will become confused. I don't feel like that's a super solid one, but I don't know. In some versions of this story, you can say, "Garlic, garlic, garlic," and she will react like a vampire and run away from you. Kind of interesting. Finally, if you are lucky enough to be born with O-type blood, she won't attack you at all. Kind of a weird one. I'm a positive, so I'm not gonna have to carry a bag of tofu or hard candies or coins. So there are a lot more spooky stories and cool things to learn about from Japan. I think I might do another episode in the future about some other interesting stories that I encountered. Spooky. But thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you have enjoyed the show today. If you would like to see photographs associated with the show, I am going to put them on Instagram. My Instagram handle for the show is EeriePodcastPatty. I wonder if I might start putting, like I already post like show notes on Patreon, so I wonder if it would be worthwhile to put like the pictures with each show on the Patreon as well. Let's think about that. If you would like to suggest future episodes, or if you have a scary story you'd like me to tell on your behalf, you can email me at eeriepodcast@gmail.com. What else? I have merch available on my Etsy page. Just search for Eerie Podcast in the search bar and it'll come up. The store icon is the same icon as the show, so it should be fairly easy to discern whether it's mine or not. But I've got shirts, mugs, a whole bunch of different cool things on there. If you would like to become a member of Patreon and get extra content, or if you want to see pictures from the show or show notes, that would be cool. You can find my page on Patreon, and that would be listed under patreon.com/eeriepodcast. Members get exclusive content, like I said. Certain tiers will get exclusive merch that I'm not going to sell at my store, but only like privately purchased from the company that I use. I use Printful to fulfill all of my orders. it goes to Etsy, but they fulfill everything and ship it out, so it's kind of nice to make. They already have a lot going on. Let's see. Oh, also, I'll give you a shout out on the show if you're interested. If you don't want me to, you can obviously say that. Also, fun fact, I got little cards here. I was really excited, sorry. Yeah. There's also a group on Facebook if you utilize that on social media. I think that's all. The wine's starting to make me sleepy and not so much relaxed. So I should probably sign off now. Thank you again for watching or listening, depending on what platform or method you are utilizing to partake of the show. Thanks for watching and listening and hanging out with me. I really appreciate your support, and it was really cool to see a whole lot of people start downloading last week or last week. So, yeah. I hope you keep it real. I hope you make good choices. Face the world freaking crazy. And I'll see you all next time. Bye!